Moving Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live, First Horizon Park tonight. The Nashville Sounds taking on the Columbus Clippers. Fan Appreciation Weekend. And again, you can get $5 and $6 beers here at First Horizon Park, the final home series of the year. And if anybody's upset about that, I know it's Caroline Fenton, so there is that. So Mike Tannenbaum put out his weekly quarterback rankings. I didn't even know this was a thing. And I saw today, see who's rising and falling in Mike Tannenbaum's quarterback rankings. But it makes sense, right? You have a general manager on staff. You might as well have him do this. And then all of your television shows, all of your radio shows.
They can react.
Oh, they can all debate. You know, is Dak here? Should he be there? Is this one there? Should he be there? And that's exactly what we're going to do. So I was looking through Tannenbaum's quarterback rankings, and I saw Mahomes 1, Brady 2, Rodgers 3, Josh Allen 4. Okay, fine, whatever.
That's fine.
I'm like, where's Tannehill? Now, it should be known, and I don't know how much you know about this because of the fact that, you know, Tannenbaum was a huge Tannehill supporter when he was the backup. And Tannenbaum was a huge Tannehill supporter during the Tannehill versus Brady discussions. And Tannenbaum, it just loves Ryan Tannehill. And he was the general manager in Miami, but mm-hmm. he didn't draft Tannehill.
But I
don't even think he signed Tannehill to an extension. Tannehill was just his quarterback, and he loves Tannehill. And Ian, I don't know about you, but I mean, I think it's well documented over the last 3 years how much Mike Tannenbaum believes in Ryan Tannehill.
It feels that way, if maybe nothing else, just to help prove himself right. But it feels that way.
That's true, too. And then we also have to take into account the fact that, you know, Floyd always didn't want to burn bridges, even if it's someone he didn't like. And maybe Tannenbaum's the same way. I don't know. But Mike Tannenbaum's quarterback rankings are out. And I'm looking for Tannehill, and I'm like, let's see, Tannehill. No, Kyler Murray's ahead of Tannehill. Okay, fine. He's doing okay right now. Derek Carr's ahead of Tannehill. I don't know about all that.
Everyone is just losing their stuff about the Raiders so far this season.
Justin Herbert is ahead of Ryan Tannehill. He has Ryan Tannehill 12th on the quarterback rankings.
Okay.
So he's got ahead of him, directly ahead of Tannehill, Justin Herbert 11, Lamar Jackson 10, Matthew Stafford 9, Derek Carr 8. But he had Tannehill 9th last week. He had Tannehill 9th after week 1 against Arizona. Tannehill goes out against the Seahawks, throws for 350 yards, doesn't throw a touchdown pass, really did throw one touchdown pass that came off the books, but he throws for 350 in a win on the road in Seattle in which his best receiver dropped the ball 4 times. And Tannenbaum drops him 3 spots?
Is it more about Ryan Tannehill's performance, or is it about other quarterbacks performing better than Ryan Tannehill has in rising through the ranks?
So here's who he shot up over from week 1 to week 2.
Probably Derek Carr.
Derek Carr shot up from 13 to 8.
Okay.
So this is everybody who's after 9. Lamar Jackson from 11 to 10. Kyler Murray from 12 to 6. Now, I didn't watch that Vikings game. I'm sure I saw that Kyler lit it up. Greg Joseph makes a field goal. They're 1-1.
Yeah.
I mean, Minnesota missed a chip shot field goal, and Arizona's 1-1. So I don't know what to make of Kyler there. And again, quarterback, I believe that quarterback that wins and losses is a quarterback stat, but mm-hmm. I also don't think it's the only thing that defines a quarterback, whereas I do think it's the only thing that defines a coach. Matt Ryan was 10th, so he was behind Tannehill. He's down to 14th. I guess I'm looking for whoever was 8th. Stafford moved up. Herbert moved up.
But that wouldn't have affected Ryan Tannehill.
No, it was Carr. It's Carr and
Carr, Carr Lamar Jackson, and Kyler. Which, if those are the players that you're in company with, I don't think that's a knock on Tannehill whatsoever.
Oh, I don't know. Carr.
Derek Carr's 2-0.
Well, doesn't they've been matter. Putting up some numbers, him and Kyler in particular, but like some stats.
But don't we know what Derek Carr is by now?
But are you not going to look at what he's done in 2 weeks and say, oh, Ryan Tannehill is a better quarterback than Derek Carr in these 2 games?
Yes, I vote Ryan Tannehill is a better quarterback. This isn't about 2
games. In these 2, yes, it is.
No, it's not. This is who you think the best quarterback is for the season. Aaron Rodgers got spanked in week 1, and he was 3rd last week. He's 3rd this week.
Because he's Aaron Rodgers.
But it's not about 2 games.
But do you really think that the margin of difference between Derek Carr and Ryan Tannehill is that big that you would say, oh, you know, like Derek Carr having two absolutely lights out games isn't enough to push him above Ryan Tannehill?
I would, yes. But that's me.
I don't think so.
Like, I would, because I think we know what Carr is. Derek Carr is, you know, he loves to check the ball down.
I think that Ryan Tannehill is a better quarterback, but from what we've seen in 2 weeks.
But Mike Tannenbaum doesn't. Like, and you can say, hey, you know, this is just about the 2 weeks. Well, then you can't have Aaron Rodgers third. So you can't say, well, for this guy, it's that. You can't do that. He's got Dak Prescott fifth. Now, I didn't watch that game against the Chargers, so I don't know.
I didn't either.
They scored 17. The Chargers scored 17 points on Dallas. Brady just hung 800 yards on the Cowboys, and he's moving Justin Herbert up. My guess is Tannenbaum didn't watch game on Sunday. I think he probably saw that Ryan Tannehill didn't throw a touchdown and was moving guys. Oh, well, okay, yeah, move him up.
But,
and QBR,
but is that not valid? Ryan Tannehill didn't throw a touchdown on Sunday.
Ryan Tannehill was great Sunday.
Yeah. So were other quarterbacks on Sunday.
So here's the thing that I think he's doing. QBR is part of the list.
Oh, and QBR is such a warped way of looking at
it. And so I think he sees Tannehill's QBR probably go down or something. I don't know. Or that everybody else's QBR goes up and puts him a little bit higher. And here's the thing. Herbert is 1-1, right? Same as Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
He beat Washington. He lost to Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how Herbert has performed compared to Tannehill. I have no idea how Herbert played on Sunday because I didn't watch. But, well, I guess he moved Herbert down from 7. So Herbert didn't get, you know, I guess he didn't bump back as far. It's really Carr. Carr and Lamar are the two that made huge jumps. Lamar from 11 to 10.
And Lamar beating the Chiefs and bumping up one spot. I think that's
And Lamar had a
fair.
Great game.
Yes.
Lamar had a great game.
He had a little, you know, gypsy doodle into the end zone.
So Carr's QBR is 61.5. Tannehill's is 46.7. I don't really care about QBR. That's like an ESPN stat that ESPN loves.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really care about QBR. But I'm surprised 12th for Tannehill behind those guys. And then it made me think of it this way. Was Tannehill's 349
348,
on Sunday?
348, I want to say.
348 on Sunday?
350, let's just say that.
Was that not a good game from Tannehill Sunday?
No, it was a good game.
But nobody is talking about Tannehill's game like it was a good game because everybody's talking about Derrick Henry. Who
Including yourself.
And I do think that. I mean, I think of it like this. Derrick Henry is Michael Jordan and Ryan Tannehill is Scottie Pippen. That's the way I look at the Titans. And everybody else is somebody else on the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
That Derrick is Michael and Tannehill is Scottie. And I think that if you were to think, okay, who are the best players in the 90s in the NBA, you'd probably have a lot of guys that Scottie may not think are better than him or may not have been better than Scottie if Scottie was the alpha on another team. But because Scottie played with Michael, everybody, you know, Scottie's
the automatic beta.
So. Sure. And so that's how I look at it. And maybe that is the way. I mean, the one thing that I took away from Sunday's game, and I try not to overreact to September football because I spend so much time telling people, don't overreact to September football. I don't look at the Raiders and say to myself, you know what? The Raiders are just this year's juggernaut. I'm not ready to go there. The one thing I do feel like I can take away from Sunday, I felt comfortable taking away from Sunday, was that if this team's going to win a Super Bowl, Derek's going to have to carry him. And I used to think that at some point, Tannehill was going to have to win you a game. You know, if you play 3 or 4 games to get to the Super Bowl and win it, and you're playing the best teams in the league, at some point you're going to be down on the road 28-7, and you're going to have to come back. And conventional wisdom tells you the way that you come back in a game is by throwing the football. Well, they were down 24-9 and 30-16, and Derrick Henry ran them back into the game. Now, Scottie Pippen made some plays too, but it was Michael Jordan who took over. And then now the question we talked about yesterday on the show was, can you do that to win a Super Bowl where you've got to go on the road to Buffalo, for example, and be down 16-3 and Derek run you back in the game? And I think that you're going to have to hope that you can do that. I don't know if you can or can't. But I feel like you're going to have to hope you can do that, and that was my takeaway from Sunday's game. So maybe I am looking at it the way everybody else is, which is, hey, Derek Carr didn't have Josh Jacobs on Sunday against Pittsburgh. Now, I don't think Pittsburgh's as good as Seattle, but I understand that. But I was just surprised that Tannenbaum, who loves Ryan Tannehill, I was surprised that Tannenbaum went there.
But also, it's not like it was a catastrophic drop. I think that Lamar Jackson very much so did deserve to be bumped up. I think Derek Carr deserved to be bumped up. I don't think Ryan Tannehill did anything that was as much of a statement move as Lamar Jackson and Derek Carr did. So it's just natural that he will fall because others are rising. I don't think it was a disrespectful move to Tannehill at all. Because when you look at it, Derrick Henry can probably do what he does without Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill cannot do what he does without Derrick Henry.
You know, I'm not sure. Derrick Henry had some great games before Tannehill was the quarterback. Like the 238 against Jacksonville and the 170 the next week against the Giants. But I don't know if – I remember like the whole process when they both hit free agency and it was kind of what do you do? And Floyd was very staunch in the belief that either you bring them both back or you don't bring either back. I mean, you're probably right. You could probably get another quarterback with Henry as your running back and be okay. Tannehill, if he doesn't have Derrick Henry and doesn't have the threat of play action, probably isn't the same. But I also don't think you could bring Kirk Cousins in here and expect to win the games that you've won over the last 3 years with him as your quarterback. So I don't
know. That's probably
fair. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Just surprised that they had Tannehill, you know, ranked. You know, Tannenbaum, who loves him, has him ranked 12. 615-737-1025. Is our phone number. We'll get your thoughts on that. Jason Fitz will join us later this hour from ESPN. Jared versus Joe coming up in an hour at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. By the way, I do owe an apology to Mike Vrabel. So remember how we said Vrabel would never admit that he, you know, one way or... So apparently the quote from Sunday, the as transcribed, quote, on if you considered going for two late in regulation, quote, no, you know what? You always go back and forth, and we've been through there before. We've been through there before. It's after
like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've been through there before. I just felt like the way that the defense was playing, no, just decided early that it's what we're going to do as far as kicking it. So he did say, you know, we've learned from the past.
We love development.
We, you know, there is, I got to give Vrabel his due. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get to your Titans thoughts as well. Stillman & Company, again, we are live. Our video stream, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, is presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. And coming up next, speaking of Tannehill and Henry, there is an element of Derrick Henry's game that I do wonder if all of a sudden is something worth discussing. And we will do that next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
The work that he does during practice, catching the ball with Coach Dews, and then just Sunday career high in catches. What was to that, and how much can that be something you can kind of like spin forward and get him more involved in the passing game?
Yeah, he made some big plays for us. You know, there was a couple screens in there, which were awesome to hit. But the other ones weren't really designed. You know, we were trying to push the ball downfield. They were doing a good job of sinking underneath our concepts downfield. Try to take what the defense gave me, which was the checkdowns. And when you throw it to a guy like Derek, and even Jeremy had some big ones where he took a hit and gained some extra yards. So if they're going to sink out of there and give us, you know, 10-plus yards of space underneath, then we have to be able to get the balls to the backs and let them make plays.
That was Ryan Tannehill today. How much of a game changer is it if Derek Henry starts catching the ball? And not even catching the ball, but like as a check down, Charlie. You know, just that every time that you drop back into coverage and you're trying to rush home and you just, hey, you know what, if Henry's in there, don't worry about it. They came on the blitz a couple of times. He picked up Jamal Adams trying to blitz through there to get to Tannehill. I mean, Henry popped him, and that was a good sign. And then the check down throws to Henry. To Tannehill's point, look, if they're giving him 10 yards of cushion and they're not going to worry about Derrick Henry, I'm going to throw the ball to Derrick Henry. I think this could potentially be a game-changing situation that we are looking at as far as the Tennessee Titans are concerned.
Oh, 100%. And I'll take it as like, you know what, like with babies, you know, when they're newborns, you don't have to worry about them doing anything or messing anything up. They're just newborns. And then they can walk. So you got to start, you know, locking the doors and baby bumps in all the corners of things. And then they can start talking. So you got to get, you're worried about what they're going to say, what's going to come out of their mouth. Because the more that someone can do, the more of a threat they can become. And I think that's exactly what this with Derrick Henry is, because what was the one criticism that we or anyone had about Derrick Henry?
Doesn't catch the ball.
He doesn't catch the ball. So if he can maintain the same kind of speed and power in the run game and also contribute in checkdowns in the passing game, oh, that's pretty scary.
So here's what I think about Derrick Henry catching the ball. Couple of things. First off, I think the checkdowns, I think that that just, now that it's out there, I think it puts the fear in the minds of, you know, the other teams.
Because it's something else that this offense can do.
I think it also is going to make you very nervous to blitz Tannehill. From this standpoint, they hit on two screens the other day, and one of them, if Nate Davis gets out there and blocks the right guy, Derrick Henry's probably gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a screen pass with Derrick Henry would scare the daylights out of me. Derrick Henry in his career has two plays where, you know, he's caught the ball out of the backfield, one against Jacksonville in, gosh, 2017, and one against Cleveland in 2019, where he caught the ball out of the backfield and he was gone. And I think that the one thing that scares me about Derrick Henry, if I'm a defensive coach and you're giving the ball to Derrick Henry, you know, between the tackles, I'm not so scared about it. I mean, I think he can get six or seven, but I'm not so scared if my big guys can get through there, because big guys can tackle him. Linebackers can tackle him. Sometimes, you know, we've seen a couple of linebackers that have just laid him out. But those DBs, when Derrick Henry gets matched up on a DB, they don't have a prayer. And that would scare me if I was a coach. Because now Derrick Henry's catching the ball, and he's catching it in space, and now he's turning around and going, well, the big guys can't run with Derrick Henry when he's doing that. I mean, that was a DB the other day that Derrick Henry just ran right by. So once Derrick gets going and those legs get moving, it's hard to stop him, it's hard to bring him down, and it's hard to catch up with him. So Derrick Henry catching space. So if I'm a coach, and I'm worried about Derrick catches it, turns around, and there's no big guys back there, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might be able to trip him up, but if you're a coach, you know, that's one of those ones where it's like, you're not catching up with him. And even if you do have a guy fast enough to catch up with him, he's not going to be strong enough or big enough to bring him down. And now you're like, well, now I can't blitz the Titans as much because I have to leave a big guy out of it. Because I can't have the big guy. I got to have at least one big guy, a linebacker or something, that's there with Derrick Henry. And then even if Derrick Henry gets into a foot race with a linebacker, Derrick Henry's going to win. So I think it's a big development for the Titans. And I'm not going to all of a sudden, you know, throw my hands in the air and say, yes, they've got this element now, it's here. But if it happens a couple more weeks in a row, then other teams are in real trouble. Let's go to your phones. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Joe texts in and says, if Derrick Henry can start catching the ball out of the backfield consistently, the Titans will then keep defenses up at night. And then how good can the Titans be?
I think there's a couple of things at play here with the Titans and their offense.
Mm-hmm.
First off, we need to see the offensive line mesh, gel, whatever. Like, really just truly, you know, get back to what we know they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
If Derrick Henry starts to catch the ball and the offensive line can adequately protect for Ryan Tannehill, I don't know how you attack the Titans, because you'll have the two receivers, and I got to believe AJ is going to start catching the ball. You'll have the two receivers plus Henry plus a third receiver, you know, a slippery guy, Rodgers, something like that, and then you can leave the tight end in the block. Because I'm not worried about, you know, if Ferkser's out there, he's just a glorified receiver.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need to focus on Pruitt being the tight end, as much as it pains me to say, because he's not a starter. I think they need to focus on Pruitt being the tight end and really, you know, kind of surprising defenses when he goes out, but using him to protect a lot. And then, you know, I'll take my four out knowing you can't blitz me and figuring that if you don't blitz me, one of those four is going to get open and catch the football. And that includes Derrick Henry. I think it's a big deal.
Oh, absolutely, 100%, because it just adds another layer of threat to what he can do. And not even just Derrick Henry, but also this offense as a whole.
I get worried, though, that, like, Derrick Henry just caught the ball a couple of times. It wasn't like those were very hard catches to make.
No.
And that, you know, the next time they try to throw the ball to him, it's going to hit him in the face mask again.
I'm going to cross that bridge when we come to it, because I think that's a legitimate fear. But also, I mean, you have to think that he's catching the balls in practice. And I don't think that Mike Vrabel's going, that Todd Downing is going to call any sort of play that he doesn't feel 100% confident that Derrick Henry can execute.
I just remember there was a play against Jacksonville a couple years ago after he took that one of the house against Cleveland where Arthur Smith designed a swing out of the backfield, Mario to throw it to him, and had he caught it and run with it up the field, there was nobody
touchdown
there.
Touchdown all day.
And it literally hit him in the face mask.
Yeesh.
Ian, how confident are you in Derrick Henry's newly found pass-catching abilities?
I think I'm kind of confident. I really like the first down play action, have him available as that little button hook right there. It feels like a free 5 yards almost every time. So, and once the, you know, and if he catches it and makes that linebacker miss and can even take it to the next level, there's no telling. But even still, just the little the play action turnaround. Button hook, 5 yards, turn around, wait for it. I mean, 2nd and 5 all day, I'll take it.
I'm in favor of any play that gets Derrick Henry the ball in space. However it takes to get it there, you know, if you got to pitch it out to him, fine. I am in favor of any play that gets Derrick Henry space with the football. 615-737-1025. Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, will join us next. Live again at First Horizon Park Sounds tonight. 7:05, great seats available. Again, it's Fan Appreciation Weekend. FanDuel Sportsbook, it's my official sportsbook app. The NFL is back, and FanDuel Sportsbook wants you to get the most out of every play. That's why they're giving everyone a $10 risk-free bet every week. And I'll tell you that Sunday is a great opportunity for you to take advantage of that possibility. Also, they've got for you on Monday night 30-1 odds if you're a new customer for either Philadelphia or Dallas to win. That means you can end the NFL week right by winning $150 on a $5 bet. I'm going to go with Philadelphia because I don't trust Dallas, even though Dallas did win and Dallas has looked okay. FanDuel is sports betting made simple. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid in as little as 24 hours. See for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook app. Just sign up with the promo code JGM to get in this week before Dallas takes on Philadelphia. You could win $150 on a $5 bet. Again, it's promo code JGM so they know that I sent you exclusively on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. 21 and over and present in Tennessee. New users only. $10 first deposit required. Must wager in designated offer market. Max bonus $150. Bonus for Tennessee users fulfilled in site credit within 72 hours. Tennessee credit expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Carson Wentz did not practice today for the Indianapolis Colts. I actually haven't checked. I need to see if the Titans injury report is out for today. Shocker with that Taylor Lewan thing before the game the other day, though Vrabel said he expected to see Taylor Lewan out there. Do not see a Titans injury. Oh, here we go. Titans injury report. Here you go. Jayon Brown did not practice. Bud Dupree did not practice. Caleb Farley did not practice. Anthony Firkser did not practice. Derrick Henry, rest, did not practice. Ben Jones did not practice. Roger Saffold did not practice. A.J. Brown, limited. Derek Roberson, limited. Taylor Lewan, full. Ty Sambrylo, full. For the Colts, the only thing you all care about, Carson Wentz did not practice. Jason Fitz joins us now, ESPN Radio, presented by Blood Assurance. Blood Assurance, give blood, give local, save lives. Fitzy, what do we make of the Titans? They get embarrassed week one against Arizona. They go out to Seattle, and Derrick Henry literally carries them to a victory. What may be the hardest game on paper on their schedule, that Seattle team, that quarterback, in that environment, and yet they pull it out. I know it's September football, and September football can get crazy. What do you make of them so far?
Well, you know, so I cheated today, Stillman. I was sitting in for Greeny this afternoon, and we had Tim Hasselbeck on, and I asked him about that game, about that Seahawks game specifically, because I knew I was going to talk to you. So I wanted to get his thoughts on really a team that's played 6 poor quarters and 2 really great ones, right? And realistically, as Hasselbeck said, it makes some sense. When you limit the preseason the way teams have limited preseason, it takes a second to adjust. So you can excuse the week one, I haven't seen a lot of teams, I don't know what they're going to be doing. You can excuse a lot out of week one. So for me, it comes down to week two and what we saw. And what we saw was a team that got very comfortable just cramming the ball down Seattle's throats, and a reminder that Derrick Henry will just wear you down as the game goes on. Also, an incredibly efficient game from Tannehill, too. So I think there was a lot of good to take away from that second half. It felt like everything got on track for the Titans. And as high as I was, you know, going into the season, I felt really dumb about that at halftime of week two. And now I feel pretty good about it again. Like, this division looks incredibly winnable. I think the Titans are in a really good spot, and they're just starting to get a little bit of mojo.
Fitz, I have made a comparison here. I am addicted to Michael Jordan. Anything that's Michael Jordan related, I'm addicted to it. I'll watch it on YouTube, whatever. I think Derrick Henry is the Michael Jordan of the Titans, and Ryan Tannehill is the Scottie Pippen. And the question I have with that is, can you win a Super Bowl in the NFL if your superstar, if your Michael Jordan, is a running back, even if it is this running back?
Yes. It's got to be a Michael Jordan, though. Like, I don't think a very good running back wins you a Super Bowl. I think an epic, oh, my God, running back wins you a Super Bowl, and that's what Derrick Henry is, especially when you start talking about where home field usually goes in the AFC and the ability to run the ball and in the playoffs. Yeah, I have no problem with that. The only thing I'd say to your analogy is that, you know, as much as we love Scotty and as much as we love Michael, it also took a Horace Grant or a Dennis Rodman for those teams to be as good as they could possibly be. And that means that A.J. Brown's going to have to step up and be that, right? Like, there's got to be that other person that can come in and be that guy. Or Julio. Yeah, there's got to be somebody else that I think steps up and takes some of that extra, hey, when things aren't perfect for those two, I'm the other guy. And if they have that three-headed monster, then, yeah, I think the Titans are capable of winning a Super Bowl.
See, Robbie Stanley and Joe were discussing this the other day, and it was one of those things where normally they steal our topics, but I said, hey, look, I'm stealing this topic from them. Robbie Stanley thinks Derrick Henry is already an all-time great. And I have a hard time getting there, but we looked at the stats, you know, like in the Titans media release, and it said, you know, what each player can accomplish. And, for example, for Kevin Byard, it's like if he gets another interception, then he's one away from tying Michael Griffin for the most or for 17th in Titans franchise history. You know, like those kind of stats. Then there's like a half-dedicated page to Derrick Henry that's like, if Derrick Henry does this, he'll be the first running back in NFL history to do it. If he does this, he'll be the second running back with LaDainian Tomlinson to do it. Who was the guy we learned about yesterday that we'd never heard of?
Steve Van Buren. LSU Tiger great.
If Derrick Henry does this, he'll be the first player since Steve Van Buren from 1947 to 1949 to do it. All the stats for Derrick Henry are in the ballpark of names like Jim Brown and Adrian Peterson and O.J. Simpson and Barry Sanders. And I think, like, Robbie, like, I can see both sides of the argument about whether or not Derrick Henry is an all-time great. What do you think?
Yeah, we're watching a Hall of Famer. I mean, I'm with you. When you were watching the broadcast, how much did you hear about some of these all-time great opportunities and the stats? And everybody keeps using the Jim Brown portion of it. And all I keep thinking about is, at what point does the body of work stand up to such regard that you have to say, okay, this is a Hall of Famer, especially in a world where the position's devalued, right? Like, it used to be a really big deal. Like, when I was a kid, if you had a 1,000-yard rusher, it was like, oh, my God, look at that. We've got a 1,000-yard rusher. Like, it was a big deal. Now everybody just sort of expects massive video game stats, and people devalue the running back position overall. So it's a little bit of pick your argument here for people that are anti-Derrick Henry being a Hall of Famer. Like, I can't find anything else that he should have done. I know it's early in his career in that sense. Like, he's got a long way left to go, we hope, and what he's able to accomplish. But, yeah, I think we're seeing all-time great 1,000% in my mind at this. And that's, embrace it and accept it. If you're the Titans and you're the Titans offense, embrace and accept the fact that everybody's going to stack the box, which is going to create incredible opportunities for these receivers. It creates an opportunity for Tannehill to be the best quarterback he possibly can be. Like, all this offensive line has to be is competent, and Derrick Henry can take care of the rest. That is a luxury, man, and I don't know that everybody really appreciates what a luxury it is, because a great running back gets you out of some bad calls. We talk about that all the time for the quarterback, but not enough about the running back. A great running back gets you into positive down and distance when you don't deserve it, and that's what Derrick Henry does constantly.
Jason Fitz, our guest, ESPN Radio, presented by Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. What do you think about the Colts? Carson Wentz already hurt. Caroline and I don't think he's going to play on Sunday. He left the facility on Monday on a scooter. He didn't practice. It's a high ankle sprain. What do you think of the Colts? What do you think of Wentz being hurt again?
Yeah, I think the Colts have been blatantly irresponsible by not doing a better job of taking care of the backup quarterback position. And everybody's going to say, well, who knows? When you have Carson Wentz, you should have known. Like, we just know he's going to miss games. You knew that was part of the equation, and you decided that you were going to go into this thing with Ellinger and Eason. Like, look, I loved both of those guys at different times in their college career. But let's not get it twisted. Neither of them are somebody that you should necessarily be afraid of. And frankly, the Colts offensive line has not played well enough. Like, we spend so much time talking about Carson Wentz. This is supposed to be one of the best offensive lines in the league. It has not looked like it. Jonathan Taylor hasn't been able to get going because of it. I think the Colts so far, just from not just from you know the Carson Wentz angle, but from overall watching their first two games, they're one of the bigger disappointments early in the season to the NFL. This is absolutely, with less than or no Carson Wentz, this is a game I think the Titans should win, and they should win handily. They should roll them.
See, I think that too. Chris Sanders got me all worried. Fitz with us here on the program. Fitz, what are your takeaways from 2 weeks of the NFL season? I always try to tell people, don't get too crazy about September football. In college, you can get worked up. Like, if I'm an Ohio State fan right now, I'm worried. Like, you can get worried about September football in college. I don't think you can in the pros. What do you make so far of some of the things that you've seen, though?
You are, that is, of all of the Stillman takes, that might be the best I've ever heard. Because look no further than what some, and I mean this with love because I work with a lot of them, but some idiots with Jameis Winston after week one that were sitting there telling you that the Saints would have been better with Jameis at quarterback last year because of his deep ball, and then he comes out week two and he's Jameis all over again. So, like, I think that you've got to look at some of this and say, man, like, let's just calm down with all of it, and let's get a month into this season before we make some huge sweeping generalizations on what we all should have seen coming. I think that so far early in the season, yeah, there's been some weirdness. There's been good teams like the Titans, good teams like the Bills that have played some bad football. I attribute part of that to the lack of preseason and the decision by coaching staff to keep themselves as healthy as possible. I attribute part of that to the weirdness of practice scheduling around COVID. I think that's all going to normalize, and over the course of the next month, we're going to figure out that a lot of these teams that we believed in, we should still believe in. The only big takeaways I think you get from the first couple of weeks are when you saw something you were afraid might be the case, that is the case. Like, we were afraid Ben might not be all that as the quarterback of the Steelers, and it looks like he's not all that. Then you can say, okay, we were worried about this happening. Now it looks like it's happening. Unless it's that, I'm not going to make any big sweeping generalizations 2 weeks in.
Your colleague Mike Tannenbaum put it together his quarterback rankings. Your quarterback, Derek Carr, has shot up them. Derek Carr and Kyler have absolutely had two great weeks to start their season. Are you buying those two guys, or do you need to see a little bit more?
No, I'm buying both of them, and likely for the same reason. I mean, Kyler Murray is not just about Kyler Murray. Like, I feel like I spent the last 2 years covering college football screaming Rondale Moore's name every single Saturday. And every single Saturday, they're like, oh, he's too small. He's never going to make it in the NFL. And then what did he do last week? Like, Rondale Moore is a weapon on a team that already has a glorious amount of weapons. So Kyler Murray's job just got a lot easier because, frankly, he's got a lot of people he can go to. And I'd say the same thing about Derek Carr. Like, what, you know, I don't think I'm, you know, breaking any trust circles here. Like, I was getting texts from Mina Kimes Sunday night, and she was watching the game back to break it down for NFL Live. And she's sitting there with me saying, look, the way that you have to cover Darren Waller creates such openings for Henry Ruggs that it does become very Kelce and Hill. Like, it's not there yet, but that's where they're going. When you give a pretty good quarterback great weapons and great opportunities, and then you also add on to that a massive understanding of the offense, that's what you get. And that's what we're starting to see from both of those guys. I think Carr is going to have a massive year. You know that I've been big on Carr anyway. I think he's going to have a massive year. But it's not just because Derek Carr suddenly woke up. It's because he has the right weapons around him. And that's, again, what I expect in a month for us to be saying about the Titans offense is the same dang thing. Like, you want to stop Derrick Henry? Cool. You're going to get destroyed by Brown and Jones. You want to stop Brown and Jones? Cool. You're going to get destroyed by Henry. You've got to make defenses make a decision to take one thing away, knowing you can beat them with something else. And when you can do that, then all of a sudden you become a top scoring offense in the NFL.
Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, presented by Blood Assurance. Give blood, give local, save lives. Check Fitz out, College Football Live. He's on it almost every day. And, of course, Spain and Fitz, which airs normally on this station. Fitzy, appreciate you, brother.
You guys are the best. Have a great week.
Yep, Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, joining us on the program. So Fitz says, all-time great already for Derrick Henry.
I think that all-time great is such an honor, and it is not something to be thrown around lightly. And I think it's an honor in itself to even be considered in that conversation. But that being said, to be considered an all-time great, you have to qualify for one. And I think that Derrick Henry is just one accolade short of an all-time great. And I
so
think
he needs one of those things that we went over on
I think
that
he
list.
Very much so will get there. I think he very much so has the ability to get there. I'm just not quite ready to call him an all-time great quite yet.
615-737-1025. We'll get to your stuff coming up next. But headlines with Caroline. We go around the league. A lot of stuff to get to. That's next. Stillman & Company live from First Horizon Park. I need to tell the fine folks out there about something very, very important today on the radio program as I search for it. It is out there that I am just supposed to tell them.
It is so important.
Play silly underdog picks today. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week for a chance to win a pair of tickets to a sporting event or a concert in Nashville. Go to thegamenashville.com to play today. Silly underdog picks brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Stillman & Company live at First Horizon Park, where once again it is Fan Appreciation Weekend for the Nashville Sounds. They're here, their final homestand of the season. Sounds baseball, by the way, on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Tonight, it's their final home stretch against Columbus. It's Fan Appreciation Week. $5 and $6 beers all week long. Grab tickets today. Visit NashvilleSounds.com. First pitch tonight, 7:05. It's time now for Headlines with Carol.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman & Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Headlines with Caroline, presented by Fiero Tequila, the spiciest infused tequila on the market. The world belongs to the Braves.
Heather Dinich just reported that the College Football Playoff Board of Managers, so that's 11 presidents and chancellors, will not vote next week on a proposed 12-team format.
Yes!
According to Bill Hancock, like I said, reported by Heather Dinich.
Yes!
So instead, they will have a video conference rather than an in-person meeting with the commissioners as they had planned. However, members of the College Football Playoff Management Committee, so different than the College Football Playoff Board of Managers. So the College Football Playoff Management Committee, it's 10 FBS commissioners and Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick. They met in Dallas on Wednesday to discuss all of these possible issues that could have been arise with a 12-team proposal. So Swarbrick said that there are enough issues that we are concerned about that we're not quite ready for the College Football Playoff Board of Managers to vote on a 12-team playoff yet. There is more support to further explore an 8-team model.
Yes!
So, Swarbrick said the support for expansion is clear, which is great, but I think the focus will be on the issues surrounding the 12-team model. So it felt like the 12-team playoff was inevitable. Like, I was ready to, you know, just
it
you
was
know, fill out my 12-team. It was inevitable Oklahoma and Texas joined the SEC.
Yep.
Now, all of a sudden, every other commissioner of every other of conference have said, wait, hold on. We don't necessarily want an 8-team SEC playoff and then four other teams that are lucky enough to get in.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So I read an article last night about kind of the inside scoop about how everybody thought they were on the same page and then now they're not. And it was like a very like soap opera-esque look at it. Ross Dellinger wrote it. Mm-hmm. He's pretty well connected. But I had a couple cocktails, so I, you know, was kind of, you know, reading through it and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
This, I'm just going to break it down for you. And I don't need any sourcing on this. It was going to be 12. Sankey was the one pushing 12. Everybody
because
else
Sankey
in the room.
Sankey knew what was going on behind the curtain.
Everyone else in the room is saying, screw you to Greg Sankey. And that's what this is about.
Which I'm all for.
I'm all for it because of this. The ends here will justify the means. If we get an 18 playoff, that's what we should have. We don't need a 12-team playoff.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Jarvis Landry placed on IR by the Cleveland Browns. He has an MCL sprain in his left knee, so obviously will be out for at least 3 games on IR. He suffered the injury in the opening drive of their game against the Houston Texans. Had a 9-yard catch on the first play, left the field, did not return to the game. But a little fun fact for you, a little Jarvis Landry fun fact. Not only is he on my fantasy team, that's another fun fact for you.
Homer.
Okay, no. He's just a good wide receiver.
You're not going to wish me to see if I'm feeling okay because I just coughed?
No, I think you're okay.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a little bit of a Homer cough there. I'm allowed to be a Homer on my own fantasy team. Anyways, fun fact, Jarvis Landry has missed only one game since his career began in 2014. He was held out last season against the Jets after he was a close contact to somebody who had tested positive for COVID. But that's pretty crazy. The very first time he sat out of a game in his six-year career at that point was because of COVID, and this is only the second time ever.
Ian, do you remember when I wanted Jarvis Landry on the Titans, what it was that led me to think that he'd be a good fit?
No, I don't think I do.
The Pro Bowl skills competition a couple years ago.
That's all I need to hear.
Oh, the dodgeball.
That's all I need to know.
He was like super aggressive in dodgeball, and I was like, hey, that guy can play for me.
Kick-tac-toe.
Dude, I remember talking about kick-tac-toe, and I just remember Floyd just laughing like a little girl and then going, ha-ha, kick-tac-toe. Dude, kick-tac-toe, that was, I actually enjoyed kick-tac-toe. In fact, the Titans, probably when they bring these kickers in here to try them out, need to put them through kick-tac-toe.
Kick-tac-toe,
maybe. And whichever one wins kick-tac-toe, that one should kick for you.
Then there's maybe a few people on my intramural kickball team that could really help out the Titans, because there's people that get really into it.
Dude, I'm just telling you, in Pro Bowl dodgeball, Jarvis Landry had the most heart. And you can tell because he's almost never hurt. What's next?
Texans rookie quarterback will get the starting nod on Thursday night against Carolina.
Does he have a name?
He does. It's Davis Mills.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you for keeping me on my toes. So Tyrod Taylor left the Browns game on Sunday with a hamstring injury. So obviously on IR, we'll miss at least three games. Davis Mills gets the starting nod because David Culley said even in Tyrod Taylor's absence, when he's healing his injury, Deshaun Watson won't play. Do not expect to see Deshaun Watson in. So Davis Mills has been taking first team reps in practice. David Culley says he feels confident after a little bit more experience. He'll feel a little bit more comfortable taking in that starting role, but I mean, it seems like the rest of the AFC South is starting to give the nod to their backup.
Here's the thing about the AFC South. And we thought going into the season that Houston and Jacksonville were going to be just tire fires. And they are.
Mm-hmm.
Although Chris Sanders was talking about how he was worried about Houston on the pregame show.
Why is Chris Sanders so worried about things that don't need to be worried about and so not worried about things that you probably worry about?
Ian, back me up. Does Chris not every single year pick one crap team in the division to say that he's worried about?
I'd say that's probably fair.
So he's worried about the Texans. And me and Mark Howard just giving him the business on that. I mean, I was like, Chris, come on. Like, the Texans.
Like, seriously? They don't have a quarterback.
Everything that you would hope for as a Titan fan has happened. You know, the Texans are a mess. Mm. Urban Meyer has no clue what to do in Jacksonville. Carson Wentz is hurt. Everything you could ask for in this division. Winning the division is not, and I know it's September football, but winning the division is not a humongous accomplishment this year. I hate to say it.
I said it going into the season, and I stand by it, that winning the AFC South, to me, for the Titans, is the absolute minimum.
What's next?
Antonio Brown on the COVID-19 reserve list. So third player on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, along with inside linebacker Kevin Minter and practice squad wide receiver. Not a big deal, but Travis Johnson will be placed on the COVID-19 list as well. So three players on the Bucs testing positive for COVID-19. So Antonio Brown is fully vaccinated. He did test positive. So in order to come back for the game, I believe they're playing the Packers this Sunday. In order to come back against the Packers, he needs to have two negative COVID tests 24 hours apart. So kind of a stretch. If he tests positive today, you know, he'll need to test negative Friday and Saturday, whatever it may be. So maybe a little bit of a stretch for Antonio Brown to come back for the game against the Packers. The Buccaneers are absolutely stacked at the wide receiver position, so it wouldn't be detrimental to the Bucs, but not having Antonio Brown against this Packers team could hurt them just a bit. But Antonio Brown on the COVID-19 reserve list.
Maybe they'll have to throw the ball to Scotty Miller.
Maybe they might just have to.
Remember when they threw the ball to Scotty Miller in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay?
I don't.
Touchdown! I almost said touchdown Patriots. Touchdown Buccaneers!
Bucks. Touchdown insert Tom Brady's team here.
I'm going to say this. Somebody we work with tested positive for COVID. Fully vaccinated, told me what their symptoms experience was like.
Mm-hmm.
I got the lesser strain of COVID that was not
pre-vaccination.
Right. That was not this bad boy that's out there now.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, to some people that are vaccinated, it sounds like, you know, just a cold.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wasn't feeling well, so I figured I'd get tested. I tested positive. Me, on my ass.
Oh, I was on my ass.
Oh, my goodness. So
I couldn't smell things for months.
It took me about a week and a half. I was back to school.
Oh, I was.
But I hear about these people that get it when they're vaccinated. It's 1,000 times better than what I got, at least from what they told me. Those are Headlines with Caroline. Headlines with Caroline presented by Fiero Tequila, the spiciest infused tequila on the market. The world belongs to the brave. Joe Rexroad is getting ready for Jared versus Joe. And this time we want it scored fairly.
It never isn't scored fairly. I walked through my scoring system with you last week, and you still had an issue with it.
We'd like it scored fairly. Jared versus Joe is next. We're live at First Horizon Park, where the Sounds start their final home stretch of the season against the Columbus Clippers. Caroline wants to tell you about BetUS.
I want to tell you about BetUS because it is my favorite sports book. BetUS simply is the best, and I want to tell you all about it. Football is back. Finally, we got a Thursday night game tomorrow, so get in on the action and do it with BetUS. They've been America's favorite sports book for over 25 years, and that is exactly why I endorse BetUS, because they have integrity. They have longevity. If you win on BetUS, you know you are going to get paid. Plus, they offer everything. They have live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, football, obviously. They have all kinds of crazy bets. You name it, you want to put some money on it, BetUS has it. So call them today. They'll walk you through setting up an account. It is super easy. I've done it. All that you have to do is call 1-800-79-BETUS, 1-800-79-BETUS, and they will walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gives bigger bonuses than BetUS. You can get up to 200% in bonuses. So if you join now, mention GAME, G-A-M-E, and you can get a sign-up bonus on your first deposit. That's so easy. Nobody beats that. I bet at BetUS. So should you. Go now to BetUS.com. Join today. Put in promo code GAME, and you can get a sign-up bonus on your first deposit. That is BetUS.com.